Thanks for joining us on our podcast, We Are More Than Menopause. Allie and I have been best friends since we were 14 and have always leaned on each other through our entire life cycles. Throughout our friendship, we relied on advice from authors and books like Judy Blume, and as we got older, we read The Girlfriend's Guide to Pregnancy. When we raised our daughters, we read Girlology. But we found that during midlife, there was no guide. So we went back to each other and realized we had to be the guides. And then we thought, what do other people do that don't have a girlfriend to chat with? So here we are, your girlfriends guiding you through, sharing what we've learned, our trials, our tribulations, the nitty-gritty, not-so-pretty parts, and all the ways we can embrace this stage of our life. Because Hi, ladies, Allie. We are more than menopause.
Welcome to We Are More Than Menopause, our podcast. And today, we are so excited to welcome Elizabeth Perlman to the studio.
My good friend. We're so excited to be able to have her.
Thank you so much.
I want to tell you a little bit about Elizabeth. You're going to hear her voice, and she has such a great energy about her voice. She is a passionate advocate for the intuitive power of teenage girls. She's dedicated to shining a light on the wisdom and insights of young women, supporting them to find their own voices as leaders and change makers. And gosh, do we know we need that. She is the founder and executive director of the Intuitive Writing Project, which is a writing-based empowerment program for girls. And she always puts girls first and teaches girls, as well as women, to tell your story, trust your heart, and declare what you know to be true. Elizabeth, I love what you're doing because, first of all, you are creating and molding the future of our world here.
Yes. Because it doesn't affect just the girls, and it affects generations.
Yes. Yes. Thank you so much for that beautiful introduction. I'm so honored to be here. Y'all are the most dynamic, powerful power couple I know of.
So, Elizabeth, I know that your program and you have a non-for-profit, that your non-for-profit really focuses on helping girls find their voice. Can you tell us a little bit about your evolution and how you really found your passion and followed your path and found your voice?
Yes. Yes. Thank you for asking. It is the path that we're all on, of course, as women. There's a book called by Maureen Murdoch called The Heroine's Journey, which is a derivation of The Hero's Journey, which was written by Joseph Campbell. Joseph Campbell said, everyone's on a hero's journey. And of course, Maureen Murdoch had a edit to that. The heroine's journey is actually for women. We're all trying to find our voice and step into our power. So I'm still on the path. We're all on the path probably until the day we die. But the way that I got here was, there's that expression, you teach what you're trying to learn, and also your struggles become your service. And so for me, when I was coming up, of course, back in the day, there were no such nonprofits as mine. There were no empowerment anything for girls when we were younger. I needed this program. And I suffered with feelings of worthlessness. I felt like my voice was stupid and it didn't matter. You know, the usual that women go through in a patriarchal system. And so over time, in my 20s and 30s, as I started to find my voice, I thought, wait a minute, all this stuff that I was learning as a woman, I should have learned that when I was a teenager. Oh my God, the time that I could have saved myself, the suffering I could have saved myself, if somebody had taught me these things earlier. And of course, also as a teenager, I love to write. I've always loved to write. But there, and writing is, we'll talk about that, of course. There's nothing as transformative and healing and powerful as writing your story. There's studies that show the power of storytelling. And if you add to that storytelling in community, it is absolutely transformational, because it's not just speaking your truth, but it's having your truth validated by other women and girls. That's the magic.
Also, there's something very vulnerable about speaking your truth in front of a group.
Oh my gosh.
So it must be so empowering and yet create so much anxiety about doing that.
Yes, the first time people come to a class, women or girls, I always just acknowledge the elephant in the room is that it's terrifying the first time you read your writing. But because of the way we structure our classes, we use this beautiful method developed by a woman for women. It's called the Amherst Writing Method. It was developed by a woman named Pat Schneider working with women. The idea is you create safe space It's a small group. There's no judgment of oneself or others, only positive feedback. We only reflect back to each other what we felt was powerful, strong, and authentic. So what happens is it's absolutely terrifying. And just, you know, speaking to out in social media where it is not safe, or speaking, giving a speech to 500 people, absolutely terrifying. But when you're in a small group where everyone has agreed to only say what they loved about your writing, what happens is once you jump into the deep end that first time, it's always scary the first time, and share your writing, I have watched, I love watching people's faces as they receive the praise. And it's not BS praise. This is grounded, absolute, adoring appreciation, unconditional love from everyone in the room. It's like watching people come back to life, because what we're speaking, what we write on paper, is the truth of who we are. And when you have people validate that and say, oh, it is beautiful, after that, you're not afraid anymore. Then it's glorious. Then it's fun. Then people are like, oh, I want to read first. Yeah.
It's such a life lesson too, right? So the idea of finding the beauty in someone else and telling them what you see, right? So if we see somebody walking down the street and we see a woman and she's got great shoes on, you got to compliment her. You're like, oh my God, I love your shoes.
Love your shoes.
If we hated her belt, but we went to her and we said, oh my God, I hate your belt. I like your shoes, but I hate your belt. Like, what do we hear?
Oh, exactly.
I hate your belt. I've got a great belt. I look
it's
horrible.
So true.
You don't like me. You, and then all of a sudden, all these things, but you hear one small little thing. Mm-hmm. And I think people say, you know, women will say, I love your shirt. I love your glasses. Love this, that, whatever. And you're like, oh, well, thank you. And
wait, we carry that.
We absolutely do.
Yes.
That one little piece of kindness goes a long ways, doesn't it?
Absolutely. There's actually
been some... for you for giving them that to them.
Exactly. Right? There's been these incredible studies. I love when the science proves what we intuitively knew all along, but there's been a bunch of studies out of Harvard, I might add, that show that criticism is not the way to improve one's performance. We all have been trained that we need criticism, and they say, actually, every little criticism, just like what you said, it causes like a little mini trauma in the brain where the brain sort of flinches and clenches up. Whereas praise opens up all these other parts of the brain, and you can learn and grow in an incredibly powerful way. Praise. We all need praise.
It's so true. I made a horrific parenting mistake when my daughter was, I want to say 12, my oldest daughter. She must have been 12, 13. And she would always give me her papers to read and to, you know, correct. And one time she gave it to me, and it was a very bad time of my life. My mom was really sick, and she handed me her paper, and I read it, and there were so many mistakes on it. Like, I just couldn't, it wasn't even like, scratch out this and replace it with this word. I drew, this is terrible, she'll tell you, spent years of therapy on this. I drew bookmarks on her paper. Like, this is just shit. Like, I can't even start it. I can't even tell you where to begin. You just need to start from the beginning. It was shit. And I handed it back to her. And she never, ever, ever let me read a piece of her writing to review it ever again. Even all through college. And like even her essay to get into college or graduate school, she never showed it to me. And it was really scarring for her. It was a horrible parenting mistake. And I didn't make it again, by the way.
Of course.
I learned my lesson. I have another child who I never did that to. But yeah, you're right. That is, it's just the best way. And Allison, that's Allison's favorite word, is the science to back it up. And I read a study. Allison always starts our podcast with, I read a study.
Well, and it's not your fault either that you instinctively responded with criticism, because we all are inundated with criticism from kindergarten onward. That's what we're taught. And so what happens, back to your earlier point, is that if you have been taught to criticize yourself, then of course it's easy to criticize others. But something one of the girls said to me the other week, which I thought was so profound, she said, I've stopped criticizing my writing because I know everyone else is listening for the good stuff. Mm-hmm. So now I look for the good stuff.
Wow. How can we take that lesson that these girls are getting at such a wise young age? Because, you know, and we have it. We have wonderful parents and things like that and have done it. But how do we take that inner voice that these girls are learning so well and in our midlife start listening to that inner voice that you're not, it's not horrible. You're not horrible. You've got things to give and you know, how do we reframe that?
Oh my God, Allison, that is the most profound question of all time. And it is an ongoing challenge again, because, well, our brains are plastic and they can evolve, but we all have been inundated with criticism, which then becomes internal criticism. Mm-hmm. So one of the best exercises that I have ever found, and I continually do it because I have not yet fully rooted out my own inner critic. She comes up every so often. She can be very mean. Is you write in the voice, you write a dialogue between yourself and your inner critic on a piece of paper. So you maybe say like, I really want to start a cafe, whatever your dream is. It always comes up when you share your dreams. The inner critic is trying to protect you. Right. Mm-hmm. And so then you let the inner critic speak and write whatever nasty thing they're going to write. And then you start asking them questions like, where did you learn this? Why do you think this is true? Usually, where did you learn this and why do you think this is true points out that it's not you at all. It's some internalized negative story from somebody else. But until you figure out who that other person is and where it came from, it just feels like you. And so I think the most important thing is distinguishing that inner critic from your true self, your soul, your higher self, your spirit, who just wants to thrive, and your inner critic that's really just an amalgam of cultural conditioning that we've internalized. As women, I do believe we have a stronger inner critic because we tend to internalize everything and make it our own. Mm-hmm. So you just write this dialogue, and by the time you will, if you go back and forth long enough, give yourself 10 minutes, you will discover something. You will hear something. Your inner critic will reveal itself. And it kind of, it's like naming Rumpelstiltskin. Once you name it, it's like, oh, that was my Aunt Sally. She doesn't know about cafes. Why am I listening to her?
Oh, wow. I love that. I love that. So if you have some inner feelings of conflict, things that you want to overcome, things that you want to pursue, but you've got that feeling of being a phony, being a fake, mm-hmm. you know, having that, what's that?
Imposter syndrome.
Write the dialogue. Write the dialogue. Write it down as in the critic's voice and your voice. And start asking questions. And I'm going to do this. I'm going to challenge those that are out there as well to try it, because I know I'm going to.
It does feel weird. It definitely feels weird at first. But the other thing I can say about talking is writing on the air. So when you're writing, think about how you would talk out loud. And by the way, you can also do this talking out loud, but there's something scientifically that happens in the brain when you're writing. It kind of separates you from it, whereas when it's in your head, I tend to go in circles. So when you're writing, it gives you some distance, and just talk to yourself always when you write. Just write as you would speak.
Talk to yourself out loud.
You can have the conversation you can have with your inner critic out loud, but it gets very confusing. Sometimes we just get pulled. The inner critic is so embedded in the brain. I feel like it's like attached to every part of the brain that it's easy to just start feeling. The inner critic often feels like the truth. And what we want to do is separate what is actually the truth, which is you as a magnificent, wise, sparkling, powerful woman, and this internalized voice of other people's nonsense. We want to separate those two things because other people's nonsense is not the truth. So when you write, it tends to help. You can do it out loud, but I would say write. But as you're writing, think of writing as just talking on paper.
So let me ask you this question, because I always want to know the logistics. Are we talking about like writing with your hand or typing?
Oh, either. Good question. You can do either. It's like either you get different, slightly different results, but it all comes out at the end the same.
So you get to the same place.
You get to the same place. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Yeah, and there is something, because actually language is sort of in the left hemisphere. So I find writing with my right hand, I have easier access. The right side goes to the left brain. We're cross lateral. So I find I can access language easier when I'm writing with my right hand. But if you think about your typing, you're using both hands, which means you're actually using both hemispheres of your brain. That's the way it works.
When you're left-handed, do you access it as easily?
Left-handed people are supposed to be the most creative. What is it? Sorry.
Allison, are you left-handed?
Oh, no, I said they're supposed to be the most creative.
Exactly. Yes, I think they are. I wish I was left-handed. But yeah, so when you're typing, you're using, it's like all circuits on. So go with whatever those guys.
And it all depends on, you know, how you feel. Do you feel, if you feel comfortable writing it out because that's what's most comfortable for you, it's going to flow easier. If you feel more comfortable typing, it's going to flow easier. So it's whatever makes you feel comfortable, that you just get it out of your head and out.
Perfectly said.
And do you go back and do you read the things that you've written? You go back that night. Yes. I know that you say to like read it out loud.
Yes. Yes. Oh, yes. If you can, after you've written it, if you can read it out loud, you will hear it differently. Again, because while you're writing, you got that inner critic churning. When you read it out loud, again, it becomes almost like this separate thing. And as women, our voices are so powerful. There's been studies that show that if a woman goes to an event, I've certainly experienced this, or is in a class or anything, and we don't, at that event, get to speak out loud, we will feel like we never really belonged and weren't really there. So speaking is the most powerful. Yeah.
And the most intimidating. It's so interesting that you say that. It reminds me of Allison and I went to a conference in January, and there was a speaker talking about hormones. And I know, like, I was so impressed, Allison, that you were able to raise your hand and ask a question in a room of hundreds of women. It was so impressive to me because I always doubt myself, and I'm so uncomfortable speaking publicly, that it was just so impressive to watch you do that. But I just remember that you also took so much from that.
Right.
Like the reward was so rich.
The reward was so immense because I was able to, these keynote speakers were talking to me. They were talking to me. But I also think you can get that. I get that same experience when I'm with someone in a class, in a course, anywhere, and we have a conversation. It's about connecting. If we just do it by ourselves, there's no connection. And it's like, I can either, like these, you know, an online class. I create online classes for a living, so I understand what goes into it. But if there's a connection between the classmates, you're going to have longer engagement, you're going to have a better retention level and a higher retention level, and you also have a higher completion level. So it's that connection. And I think with writing and saying it out loud, now I don't think we necessarily have to share our intense feelings with anyone, but I think it's about speaking it out loud. And that's why we go to therapists too, isn't it?
Speak
out loud.
That's right. Yeah. That's so well observed. Yeah, we need to be witnessed. And sometimes we witness ourselves, and that is the healing. And then I do agree. The more you can be witnessed by other people, unconditionally supportive people, then the real healing begins. We're wounded by other people. So it's so powerful when other people assist in our healing. Yeah.
That's beautiful.
That is beautiful. It's a very powerful tool. And I have to ask, are you running workshops for women? You do so much work with girls.
That's a great question. Yes, we do have classes for women. It's interesting. I would run even more if we had, wink, wink, more women making time for it. The challenge is, as we all know, as women, we all are self-sacrificers. So what happens so many times is the mothers who love us and sign up their daughters year after year will say to me, I love writing and I would love to write with you, but I just don't have time because I need to focus on all the 10,000 other people. So the great challenge is making time for your own empowerment is the hardest thing. We do have women's classes, absolutely.
And that's part of self-care too, isn't it?
Yes,
self-care. You know, I'm taking care of my daughter and I want her to have this, then I'm important too.
Exactly.
I should allow myself to have that same reward and have self-care. And I think that as I have aged and my circumstances in life have changed, my kids aren't as and don't need me the same way that they need me physically before. But I am taking more time.
Yeah.
Once I turned 50, I started doing this. I started thinking, you know what? I deserve this. I did it for everybody else. I deserve this.
And we also teach by modeling.
Oh, yeah. So, you're right.
I mean, what are our kids seeing when we spend our entire life sacrificing for everybody else?
Exactly.
What are they learning from us?
Girls especially, we all learn these things from our mothers, watching our mothers not take time. And so then we don't take time. I will say one other thing that I think is a fear, and I want to address it right up front, is that all women, like, I mean, all humans, but I think it's especially poignant in women, we have a fear of being judged by other women.
Oh, absolutely.
By the way, I have read extensively about, there is a reason for that. And that is that basically the divide and conquer philosophy of male-dominated society was to pit women against each other. And that's happened again and again. Oh my God, we don't even have to get into that. But what's happening now, because of women like you two embodying it and so many powerful women examples, is we're starting to realize, actually, the unique power of women is our love and our compassion and our collaborative nature. And we do not naturally want to fight with each other. We naturally want to love each other. Right. That was just like a weird patriarchal stupid thing. So we do have to get over, because there's always, you know, in high school, everyone had experiences with the mean girls, which I have a whole philosophy about that. But I think there has to be, you have to give yourself permission to try a new environment and be open to the possibility that you will be absolutely cherished and adored by other women, and then make a decision. Because I think there's just this instinctive fear that we'll be judged. And now more and more, that's not the case anymore. We're changing that.
Well, we are. We are changing it. We are changing it by having these conversations, but we're also changing it step by step from that generation of empowering each other and empowering ourselves. And so I think that that's a beautiful goal at the end of the day. Yeah. So if you were to give us three ways that we can take this and incorporate it into our lives, what are three of the top things that you would tell us? Three steps, three takeaways, three to-dos.
Well, the first one is sort of a philosophical statement, and that is to, you may already believe this, but if you don't believe it, sort of open your mind to the possibility that it is true, that you are a born storyteller and you are the heroine of your own life story, and therefore if you don't write your story, it'll never be written. We tend to think, I mean, I thought this until very recently, I felt like a sort of a secondary character in somebody else's story, which happens so often. And then you realize, oh my God, if I don't write stuff down, if I don't speak my truth, then the truth, that particular perspective on the universe, will be lost. And also, that first point that we're all natural writers and storytellers, we tend to think, oh, so-and-so is Shakespeare as a writer. I'm not. It's this weird hierarchical thing. And our philosophy is, no, everybody's a writer. So it doesn't matter if you, that's your career title. Who cares what your career title is? You are a storyteller and you need to tell your story. So that's the first one.
Own your story and tell it.
Own your story and tell it. And then the other two are really simple, although not easy. Make time for it. You have to. Inspiration arrives when you're present and ready for it. You can't just like wait for inspiration and then write. No, you sit down when you don't have any thought in your head and you feel like you have nothing to say. And you sit down then. And then the time for it piece connects to the third one, which is, if you don't know what to write about, the best thing to get started is just do a sensory observation of how you're feeling in the moment, what you're seeing, what you're hearing, what you're feeling, what you're thinking, just stream of consciousness, just sort of pour things out onto the page. And the beauty of that is you'll realize, oh my God, I actually have a lot going on. I have a lot to write about. And this is just the most surface level. This is just a snapshot of your soul in the moment, what you're thinking and feeling. Oh my God. Any one of us could probably write for hours about what they're feeling in that 1 minute. We have so many thoughts and feelings. And by the way, women have, they've done some studies. They believe that women actually feel more emotions per minute than men. So we've got a lot going on inside.
We've got a lot going on.
Yeah.
I also had to step outside when I started journaling. I love journals, and I go in and out of journaling for myself, journaling for creativity, journaling for work, etc. But I know that I allow myself to misspell. I allow myself to cross out. I allow myself to my handwriting that nobody can else read it. I allow doodles. I allow all of the, you know, there's lots of times where for some reason I'm sideways on everything for a while. And then it's okay. Because it's you. It's your story. It can look any way you want it to look.
That's right. That's right. And actually, no one ever has to see it. If you need, if you're really pissed off or upset about something, write a tirade or a rant, as we call them. The girls, sometimes they'll say, I just need to rant. And we're like, do it.
Right.
And then when you're home, or if you're already home, you hold the paper over the metal kitchen sink where there's water running, you light it on fire and rinse it down the drain. If you want a really extreme version of just seeing that nobody else has to see it, it doesn't matter what anyone else thinks. It's for your catharsis.
And I've done that several times when the emotions just take over and I write, 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 and it's not pretty. And I don't want to see it, but I had to get it out.
Exactly.
And I light it on fire.
Exactly. And it's so
that fire that was healing.
Absolutely.
And that's what all of this is. It's all of this is about healing and getting in touch with your soul and really finding our voices and using them. And
we're never too old to do that.
Never too old. Never too
old. And we thank you so much, Elizabeth, for sharing this incredible story with us and this and these tools, and gives us an opportunity to do some of our own work.
So it was truly an honor. Thank you. You both are so amazing. And as I said, I'm truly honored to just get to talk with you two. You're an inspiration for all women.
Well, thank you, listeners, for taking the time out. So follow us, subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcast, or whatever your platform that you're listening on. We're really happy that you're here.
And we are morethanmenopause.com. You can find us there. Plus, you can find all of the different events and things that we've got going on. So join us.